Are there any descendants of Rabbi Kukor alive nowadays with the last name?
Yes, there are. Actually, one just passed away.
He died.
One was a nephew of. He was a nephew of Rav Kook, or grandnephew of Rav Kook. He just died in Rehovot. He's chief rabbi of Rehovot. Very lovely individual. I met him a number of times when I visited my brother in Rehovot. He just passed away, I think, when was it? Thursday, Friday, or four, I don't know, last week sometime. Yeah, very, very nice individual. Very, 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 very nice, warm personality. Yes, there are. So there are descendants of him. In fact, who is it? I don't remember now. He also has students, many students. So he's known more, his Torah is kept by not just by his children, by his students. It's usually like that sometimes. Okay. Let's kind of go on. Who wrote it? Who made it?
Who runs it now?
I don't know. But there's also Yeshiva Merkaz Harav Kook. There's Yeshiva. He also made Yeshiva Merkaz Harav. You can actually go visit his house. It's right in the downtown of, the downtown area, Rehov Yafo. And it's really a block away. And you can actually see the original, his house. And there's a room that was set up like the original Yeshiva of Merkaz Harav. It was very small. It's actually very small for a while. And it's come back up. Okay. Let's kind of make sure we're ready to go here. Okay, here we are. So today is the last piece of the part about war. Make no war, make peace, make not war. Of course, this funny thing that Rav Kook is the one who, of course, writes here about war. But we've seen different things and different reasons why Rav Kook would say and talk about, I'm sure I got my pages here, why Rav Kook would want to talk about the importance of what's going on here. You may remember the last piece we did was part number 9, which basically said that the whole reason for these wars is to show that, history is going down, so to speak, that people are so corrupt and all the values are really just coming apart, and this is offering us an opportunity, really, for the Jewish people to step in. We'll bring everybody in the world order, and everybody will kind of move on to the days of Mashiach and Bnei Yisrael and come to Eretz Yisrael and so forth. This last piece, part number 10, is a little bit different. It's saying that the impact upon what's going on all around the world is also having an impact upon the Jewish community as well. And we, we're the only nation that was chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to bring His MS, His truth, and His Torah, and His oneness, His achdus to the world itself. There's no room in the world for anyone else to do so. Anyone else is really an imposter, Christianity. And by the way, in the thought of Rav Kook, someone asked me this the other week, what does Rav Kook think about Islam? And in the thought of Rav Kook, Islam is really an offshoot of Christianity. Doesn't really mean theologically it's an offshoot, but actually one comes after the other. So if Christianity is false, then obviously Islam is false, though Islam does believe in one God, of course. But as the world is beginning to go through this process, so, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Kedusha is getting trounced, so to speak. So the only people who can step in are the Jewish people. But because the Jewish people have been subjected to all these, galus and all these influences around us, even ourselves, we're not going to see initially the closeness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the clarity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as much as we could. In fact, we're going to see it almost like breaks between the people who are real tzaddikim, yechidim, can understand the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on a high level. And we, the rest of us, who are, the Pashut Yidden, so to speak, have been influenced by what's going on around us. We're only going to see a lower level of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presentation initially. And it's a bit distorted, a bit changed, it's not exactly what it should be. And if anything, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is crying out. The Shekhinah is in Gullus, the Shekhinah is suffering, the fact that not only is the world coming apart, but that the Jewish people have been influenced by what's going on around them. So this is almost like the world war that Rav Kook is living through is a scream of the world and a scream of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, scream of the world to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and to some extent it's a scream of the Shekhinah, which feels it's been uprooted and feels like there's nobody out there. even the Jewish people are not understanding HaKadosh Baruch Hu fully. So the Churban that's going through, the Churban of destruction of the world taking place in World War One, is really HaKadosh Baruch Hu crying out that the Jewish people should come back as well and to recognize who HaKadosh Baruch Hu are and to realize that they're different from the rest of the nations itself. And Rav Kook is, of course, this is the last piece, and Rav Kook is really saying that this, of course, is the time now the Jewish people need to step up to the plate. The Jewish people need to return to Eretz Yisrael, lift up our eyes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to come to Eretz Yisrael. That's the place you can recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's really what this last piece is all about. So this is while the previous piece was, well, the natural people to step in are the Jewish people. This piece is saying, yes, but the Jewish people are not really able to step in at this point because of all the stuff that's going on around them. It's also kind of sullied them a little bit as well. But they have to, you know, they've got to get over it. They've got to, you know, dust themselves off, and they've got to step into their place to kind of lead the world itself. Because until that point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be crying for us to come back. It's almost as if to say, so that's another part of the war, another part of the learning of this whole thing that comes out of the war that Rav Kook is living through. And of course, as we pointed out, this is not only World War One. Maybe World War One, World War Two, the present situation, and so forth, that has not fully settled down. Though, of course, as we often point out, that today, yesterday was Yom Yerushalayim, of course, but today, in a modern era, we've come, you know, worlds ahead of where we were. So people recognize Eretz Yisrael. Okay, the march went through. There were little scuffles yesterday, but by and large, the march went through. We were supposed to go through. And as, you know, Naftali Bennett said, it's a no-brainer that the flag of Israel is going to fly in Jerusalem. Like, it's not up for grabs. So that's already, you see that we're already turning back. Now, we're not everybody who's raising the flag is seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we know that. But that's also about the process that we're going through here. So let's just read here the subsection. This is called the election of Israel. The election of Israel will be revealed at the maturity of the world. Okay, so in other words, as the world grows and develops and everything is coming apart, everybody will recognize eventually the Jewish people and the Am HaNivchar. That's what the election of Israel means. This is not about provincial elections for those of you guys. Okay. And Christianity, which has expropriated certain Jewish mystical doctrines, will stand repudiated. In the meantime, the righteous experience the pain of the Shechina. So the righteous, the tzaddikim, realize that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going through, that the rest of Klal Yisrael have not exactly where they're supposed to be. Okay, so it's a little bit of an amorphous kind of piece. I think, by the way, these little subsections or the introductions, I believe, were done by Rav Kook's son, Tzvi Yehuda, when he published the second edition or third edition of the Sefer. That's what they weren't just written by Batzal Nahor himself. So, and the original edition didn't have these things. So Batzal Nahor decided, as a compromise, he put the subsections which were written by Tzvi Yehuda Kook in the second edition, he put them on the English side and not on the Hebrew side. That's why they're only on one side. Okay, let's go through this piece itself. Begdulas Olam, the greatness of the world or the maturity of the world. Bohofat, let me just get my pointer here, make it easier for me to follow. Where's my pointer? Come on down, the boys. Okay, here we go. Begdulas Olam. There you go. Begdulas Olam Bohofat Haziv Shel Kedusha Yisrael Bramuto. When the, can make it a little bigger here. Let's see, let's make it a little bigger here. That's too big a little bit. Let's see, one second. Forgive me just a moment to play with this a little bit here. Where's the number here? 150, I can't make it 150, I might have 125. If you want to make it 130. There we go, okay, that's good. Begdulat Olam, the maturity of the world, Bofat, Haziv Shel Kedusha Yisrael Bramotzel, when the splendor of Israel's wholeness will be revealed, Ein Achiza L'chol Zonim. There will be no place for anybody else who is on the outside to see. There will be no one else to actually to be revealed. There'll be no room for anyone on the outside, anyone who's to come up, who's on the outside of Israel, to come up with any kind of understanding or pushing aside the feet of the light of Israel, to come up with that will come up with some kind of any mystical enlightenment or any other kind of faith, mechona emunit, any kind of contraption of belief. Asher tuchal lamod chus mim siyat ha'umah. There'll be no one who can come at the very end of time to come and understand that there's an alternative way to reach the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, except outside the existence of this nation, Kvodah v'Shifat Yikra Kiddushah. In other words, that are going to exist for the whole, for the existence, the honor, and the hashpa'ah, the influence, and which is very holy. In other words, at the very end of time, at the maturity, everybody's going to recognize that there's no other possibility out there to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu except through the Jewish people, through B'nai Israel. This might be a hidden swipe at Christianity, in other words, or not just Western culture, but more Christianity, which is, we live in a Christian world, okay? Because the upper light, or the supernal light, v'ziv ha'yichud ha'muchad, and the unique and united unity, she sodoha yon, which the uppermost basis, or hamet bihiraso, is the highest, I guess the unique quality of the clarity of the light itself. Chaybo is living. Hari kasher b'skulat Yisrael is connected to the unique ability of skulat Yisrael, the treasure of the Jewish people, the uniqueness of the Jewish people, which is Hashem elokav amo tuat melchbo. Okay, that's possibly quotes from I think Tehillim, that the Hashem, his God is his. These are the people of Hashem is with him, or imo Hashem elokav imo tuat melchbo, and the trumpet of Hashem, trumpet of the king, is through him. We are the ones who are going to really be there for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and at the end of time, the gedulat olam, when we finally come to the change, so to speak, I guess this post-war that he's looking at, or pre-Yemos HaMashiach, or Ikvus HaMashiach, when suddenly things are going to change, and everybody's going to realize the beauty and the splendor of the Jewish people's Kedusha, so there'll be no opportunity for anyone else to come up with any alternative. You can't go to an ashram, you can't go to a church, you can't go to a mosque, you can't go to a monastery, you can't come up with your own religion, you can't be an evangelical. That's not an alternative to come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and recognize what Israel is. It's only going to be, everybody will recognize, it's the Jewish people, that the Or HaYon, the supernal light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is really going to be really is connected to Sgulat Yisrael. That will take place in the future times. Okay, that's what will take the end of times. That's going to be the conclusion of this whole story. We're not there yet. Miridat olam vashbat haneshama yisraelit. However, unfortunately, because of the descent of the world that we're living in now, says Rav Kook, things have gone down. Destruction of world of Western culture, destruction of the values of the world, the war that we're going through, the killings, the murders, and hashbalat nevesh yisraelit, and as well, the lowering of neshama, the Jewish soul. Because of both things as well. So the Jewish soul has been pushed down a little bit among because of the world we're living in. Nifrat ha-yichud ha-yom im kor achduso. The higher unity with HaKadosh Baruch Hu has been pushed away, has been separated from its source of its unity, v'yolah l'mala l'rakil l'shchakim, and has gone up separately above the heavens. High l'shchakim is high above the heavens. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu really is waiting for the Jewish people to step up and waiting for the people of the rest of the world to recognize the Jewish people. In the interim, however, something has happened that's not ideal. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't be stuck in the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to pull back a little bit. It's like a tzimtzum in Kabbalah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's pull back. And the Jewish people themselves, we're not where we're supposed to be. Even HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't be with us. Ba'olam ha'chayim lo yafiu kim nagi hazar zirur shel yichud ha'tachton. And therefore, in the world of living, there is only a little bit of the glow of the lower yichud, the lower connection, the lower unity, which is hanishav mehaborot hashovim v'yad hazarim bonogad, which is really drawn from wells that are actually being pulled from secondary sources, which are impacted by the hands of strangers. Okay, in other words, and somehow our level of coming close to Hashem has been sullied by the people we're living in. And our sense of what Kedusha is all about, coming close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, looks like we've been influenced by all the other alien cultures that we've been living in the midst of. So almost as if to say that our Judaism in the Galus has really become, I don't want to say Christianized, but it's become paganized, or it's become ruined, or it's become watered down. Or it's not the real original living Judaism that's only going to be when we get to Eretz Yisrael. That's what he's trying to say. It's a very strange term. And the Jewish people, when we feel this, is shuddering, and we're bound, chavileha, our bonds, our ropes are pulling us down, or maybe it's chavli leida. And what do we say? Oyna lo ki ayifa nafshi. Says, woe to me, my soul, my nefesh is ayifa, is tired. What are we saying? We're saying, you know what, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and this might be the way the Knesset Yisrael is saying this, or the HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying this. The secrets of the Torah are given to the people on the outside, given to strangers. HaTorah Nisrefet, the Torah is being burnt. Gvileha Nisrafim, the Gvileha is the Gvilim, are the parchments are burning. Viotiot Porchot, and the letters are flying up in the air. This is the story of Rabbi Kiva, who was burned at the stake, and of course he saw the Otiot Porchot Bavir. He's kind of using that quote. In other words, our Judaism in the diaspora has been influenced, and we're left with not what we're supposed to have. We've been influenced, and the secrets that are given to those who are chitzonim. Once again, this might be, it's possible the way some of the interpreters are saying this is really referring to Christianity. Christianity has taken over some of the Jewish values, some of the Jewish ideals, and as a result, what we're left with and the world that we're living in has been influenced by it, and we don't even realize it.
Rabbi, I want to understand something from you and from Rav Kook.
Me more than Rav Kook, yes, okay.
Yeah, okay, fine. He's not here to explain. Is he talking about now being his time, the 1800s and early 1900s, or is he talking about Judaism forever? I'll tell you why I ask. What's the difference then and the Crusades and the Spanish Inquisition? It was actually worse back in those years than during Rav Kook's year. So I'm trying to understand you, Ralph. Okay. I'm trying to understand where he's coming from as far as, like, what's he talking about?
I think I'll tell you how I understand what he's talking about. He's talking about the fact that until now he's saying Jews have to come back to Zion. Jews have to kind of build the land. This is an opportunity for us to shine. But, you know, the Jews of his generation are not really where they're supposed to be. There's a very strong Zionist movement that's developing, and people are starting to move, and people are starting to develop, to build the land. But they don't have it all right necessarily in Judaism. Somehow they've been influenced by a lot of this other stuff that they picked up from the Western culture or from the Christian society that they live in. And so they'll talk, maybe, for example, they'll talk, you know, it's not the letter of the law, it's the meaning of the law, the spirit of the law. It's clearly, you know, this is clearly what reform or what social Zionism is all about, or secular Zionism is all about. We believe in God. We believe that this is the land of our ancestors. But, you know, we don't believe in God. Or we don't believe that we're supposed to be keeping the Torah. I think that's what he's trying to say at this point. So, in other words, God is crying. He says, oh, my God. You know, until now, it's been like positive, positive. God is waiting for us. Now God is saying, but look what's going on here. They're coming back to me, but they don't have it right. You know, they're driving a car and one of the wheels is rolled off. And they're trying to get along without it. And they don't even know something's wrong. They don't even know the muffler fell off the car. And the car's moving, but it's not really making good progress. That's what he's trying to say. He's trying to say, and what's going on here as a result, we don't see the clarity of Hashem because we ourselves have kind of, we fell into the mud. We still got the mud all wrapped up around us. We're trying to get up, but at the same time that we're trying to get up, look, we can't go into the king's meal because we're dressed in mud. So which comes first? First, you got to get out of the mud and get in your royal clothes. And where's the king? The king is saying, "Well, I'm waiting for these people to come. I'm waiting for my royal servants to show up. Where are they? Why are they late?" And the answer is, well, they're late because they're in the mud. Whose fault is it they're in the mud? I don't know whose fault it is. They slipped in the mud. They should have been more careful. But we're not there. That's what I think he's trying to talk about. But he's not talking about necessarily crusaders and destruction and killing Jews and not killing Jews. I think he's really talking about theologically. He's saying that the Jews themselves need to kind of pick themselves up even further. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has kind of withdrawn a little bit from us, waiting for us to take the second step. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I can only be where the Jewish people really are, you know, going to shine with me. So who will be with me? The super tzaddikim. The super tzaddikim, and the super tzaddikim will understand how things are not where they're supposed to be, and that's where it continues here in the rest of this chapter, the rest of this subsection here. But it's not about...
Really,
Yeah?
Here they talk about Judeo-Christian society. But is that just in North America? Would that concept also be true in Israel? Would they say Judeo-Christian there?
Well,
or is it just here that we've been influenced?
So it's the Christians who talk about the Judeo-Christian society. Jews don't talk about that term. The Christians would like to show that they're a continuation of Judaism. That's why there's an Old Testament and a New Testament. That's why they keep the Apocrypha. That's why a lot of their holidays have basis within our Torah. They would like to show that they are the continuation of the story. Therefore, they use the term Judeo-Christian. I think Rav Kook is really not talking so much about Israel. He's talking really about where he's living now. He's outside of Israel at this point. He's seeing the world. But in Israel, we don't talk about Judeo-Christian. We talk about, Judeo. We talk about whoever lived in Eretz Yisrael. But that's what he's trying to say. He's trying to say, in other words, what he's trying to say, I think what he's trying to say at this point is, you guys, like not you guys here, but you guys, you Jews, it's up to you to pull yourselves up. It's up to you to recognize that if you don't get moving, Kadosh Baruch Hu is waiting for you, but you don't even realize that Kadosh Baruch Hu is crying while he's waiting for you. That's a very strange way to end this. The last thing was like, okay, the Jewish people are going to take up over the world stage, and we all say to ourselves, okay, so where is this? And the answer, Rav Kook says, well, the answer is we haven't really gotten up on the stage yet. We're still in the pit. We're still in the orchestra pit. We haven't figured out how to get the ladder to get on stage. Maybe we're below the orchestra pit. Maybe we're in the skeletons of the theater, in the woodwork of the theater.
I don't find it strange at all. I think it makes complete sense. Yeah,
okay. I say it's a strange way to end off this piece. I don't mean the strange way. It's a strange way. This is the last piece he has about war. There are 10 subsections. This is the last subsection. So I guess it is not strange to the extent that, well, that shows you why we're not where we're supposed to be. Because we're not where we're supposed to be. And who knows we're not where we're supposed to be? The people, the really super tzaddikim, will understand. And they recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is upset with the Jewish people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has got a lot of mercy and a lot of patience and so forth. But you know what? We're not doing what we're supposed to do. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in other words, at the end of time, let's go back to where we got so far, because I want to pick this, but keep ourselves on track here. So at the end of time, when the world gets mature, Gedulos Olam, the world is great, finale, it's on a spin, it's at the top of the world, what's going to happen? Everybody's going to recognize Kedushin Israel. Everybody's going to recognize the greatness of the Jewish people. Everybody's going to realize there's no way around that except through Judaism. You can't choose other world religions, you can't use other faiths, other mysticism. It's all got to be through Judaism. Hashem Elokav Amo, God is with him, and this is the king's trumpet, is what Hashem with the Jewish people. However, unfortunately, because the world is so in drenched, so to speak, the world is so in the down and dumps, in the mud, so the neshama of the Jewish people has been affected by it. We've been pulled down a bit. We're not the same. We're not completely off the rails. But, we've been influenced, and therefore our diaspora Judaism, and this is the key here to Rav Kook's approach in many places, our diaspora Judaism is really not, I'm going to be careful I say this, I'm going to say they're not the real McCoy, is not complete. Our diaspora Judaism has been influenced so heavily by the world around us that we've incorporated certain pagan ideas or certain negative ideas into our serving of Kadosh Baruch Hu. And the soul that's deep down within us says, Oy, Gaval, what's going on here? How is this possible? How can we understand this? How can we feel this? I mean, there are a lot of things that we have in our Judaism that clearly, are affected by what goes on around us. Who does not walk around December? Who does not walk around the mall in December and whistle all these Christmas tunes? Can you imagine? Go to Israel, be in Israel for the month of December. You will not even know it's Christmas unless you go to Nazareth or Bethlehem or the other Christian communities and sites. But otherwise, you'll miss Christmas completely. But who? Beginning in November, December, you're singing, whistling, right? You're whistling Silent Night and all the other things. And these hymns have an influence on you. Believe it or not, the neshama, every time that you're singing Silent Night, Holy Night, right? Christ is born, right? The king, all these kinds of things. Forgive me for saying that. What's going on here? Your neshama is shuddering. Oh, you don't even know what you're singing. That's what he means to say.
Rabbi, I just want to point something out again. I've said this before. We as Jews have not changed. I take a different tune to Rav Kook. We did not change from the time of the Hellenists. We did not change from the time of the Romans. We did not change from the time of the
Spanish Inquisition. We did not change. We have Israel today, and people move to Israel because we had a once in a universal catastrophic event called the Holocaust,
yes,
which created the state of Israel. The people, the event created it. We didn't, we didn't do tshuva to say, well, we're going to make this. It was a necessity, which is the mother of invention.
I think Rav Kook would disagree with you. I'm going to speak for Rav Kook here now, or speak for me, and to say that it only happened because in the end of the 1800s and beginning of the 1900s, people pushed to begin to build up the state of Israel. There could not have been the Holocaust survivors and coming from the DP camps would go to Israel or go to Palestine then, unless there were people living there willing to accept them. So it's not that suddenly the Holocaust made the land of Israel. The land of Israel was prepared itself. It happened to be that once the Holocaust occurred, it became a natural place for Jews to go because nobody else wanted those Jews. That's really what happened. But if the groundwork had not been done in the days of Rav Kook and before and after, there could not have been, they would not have simply just finished the Holocaust and now the Jews go to Israel. No. Jews would have stayed in Europe or gone to America or somewhere else. that's my take on it. So things are not exactly as they were. Things have changed. The fact that you have this movement going to develop the land, except the movement itself, Rav Kook is going to tell you, has got certain fallacies, weaknesses that have been caused by being influenced by people around them. And so it's not a religious, spiritual movement, which is what Rav Kook would want it to be. It's not about building and waving the Degel Yerushalayim, the flag of Israel, to say we're all coming to the base of Mikdash, we're all going to keep Shabbat and Kashrut and spirituality and Hashem and so forth. No, it's about coming to Israel as a place for a people. That's what's missing. Where does that come from, this people concept? That comes from all the influences of everybody around us. To the extent, one more point, then I'm going to go back and read the rest of this subsection. To the extent that other nations were going through self-determinism, or self-identity, or development of their identity, or independence, process of it towards independence, and break away from provincial or commonwealths and empires, right, to the extent that that was taking place, that influenced the people who wanted to go to Zion. That's why there was a movement when we were offered Uganda, said, let's take Uganda, go to Uganda, live in Uganda. That's why Grand Island, north of Buffalo, was built by Mordechai Noah as a farm settlement to be a Jewish community, because he didn't realize you got to be in Israel. So all these people had great intentions, wonderful intentions, but they, you know, it just didn't work. It couldn't work because they were so stuck in the mud, they didn't realize the mud was all over them. They didn't even know how to wash the mud off. So the concept of building Grand Island into a Jewish settlement, it's a contradiction in itself. Or the idea of going to Uganda, and Uganda would be the state of Israel, whatever they would call it, that's ridiculous. And it didn't pass. The Zionists, the majority of Zionists didn't understand it couldn't pass. Anyways, I'm going back here. I don't want to lose a train of thought.
Yeah. Just before you go back.
I'm back, yeah.
So maybe we could say the same things about Thornhill or Muncie or Lakewood.
Yeah.
We felt like about Grand Island, and it's not Eretz Israel. So are we all stuck in the mud, too, to some extent?
Okay.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. I think, ultimately, Rabbi, Uganda and all these places, and Argentina, who knows where else, yeah. Ultimately, I think the peak of a year that was in all these kind of controversy somehow came to the fore, and they all recognized that ultimately there's only one place.
Yep. Okay.
Israel.
Right. So the difference is maybe Thornhill and Muncie and Lakewood, though I don't know how you put all three of those things together in the same breath. I mean, I can only talk about Thornhill. Is we understand, we can read this book and say, yeah, it makes sense, we're not in Israel. I think the people like Mordechai Noah, it's a good example, who had this dream from Grand Island, he thought that was going to be there. That was going to be, you know, the utopia. To build up Grand Island, nothing was there, and that's going to be a place for the Jewish people, and that's the end of the story. We all we don't move. Maybe we're stuck in Thornhill. Maybe we're too rooted, or maybe the Gullus is too glorious for us to get out. But we all recognize that, you know, when we daven and we say we want to get back to Eretz Yisrael, we talk the talk. Maybe we don't walk the walk.
Thornhill doesn't have a Jewish retirement home. I can't move there.
I know. I'm sorry. I know it's a big problem. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know. But that's why Thornhill is not the end of the world. Okay, That's why it's not, that's why Thornhill's not Jerusalem. Okay, I'm sorry. I know Avram's got this problem. He's trying to find a place to go. It's a serious problem. Wish you luck, and we're trying to find, trying to see if we can help you out there. Okay, let's come back to the story. So at any rate, let's come back to this chapter. So the soul is, your soul is crying. Oh my goodness, what's going on here? Secrets of the Torah have been given to the Chitzon and the people on the outside, Christians, whatever it is, people of other faiths. Even today, right? They're talking about Kabbalah. Kabbalah, Madonna and Kabbalah. Can you imagine Madonna and Kabbalah? Or rather, other great Hollywood stars who've discovered Kabbalah. What is it? Do we think they really know Kabbalah? The Torah is burned. The Gvila is Nisrafim. The scrolls are burning up. The parchment is burning. And the Otiot Parchot of Neitzion HaKorin. Now, here we go back and let's continue here. And the dear people of Zion, the Bnei Zion, the sons of Zion HaYikarim, who are very dear, Afer tachat pe'er, they've put afer, dirt, ashes, have replaced pe'er. Pe'er means the beauty, their tefillin, that what's replaced them, they put in the place of their tefillin, they put afer. If enough people are aware where this comes from, who some has been put, that is a custom, and you don't see, you sometimes see this today, where the chassan, before he marches down the aisle, puts a little bit of ash right on his forehead where the tefillin would go. Has anybody ever seen this? You've never seen this? Okay, you've got to look very carefully. Don't do it in public.
Yeah, Jordan did it, Rabbi.
Okay, there you go.
Jordan.
Okay. Yeah. So that's what it means. So you put
Aether.
Sorry. Come again?
I'm asking Sheldon who did it?
His son.
My son.
His son.
Okay.
This is not, you're not going down a blackface, it's just a little bit of ash. Just put a little bit of ash. What you're doing is it's a remembrance of the Korban Abayas. You're remembering, everybody knows you break the glass. Everybody sings you break the glass, it's a happy moment. Breaking the glass means they're married. No, breaking glass means you remember the base mikdash is destroyed. But afer means you put ashes in the place where the pe'er, where the tefillin go, the beauty. That's what pe'er means, the beauty that you're wearing tefillin. The tefillin shorosh goes there. You're putting, so Rav Kook is just extending his term to say that, you know what, theologically, where we were once a beautiful people on our own, living in Eretz Yisrael, and we're not there now, we've kind of replaced it by the ash of all the dirt around us. Kamim nevone lev b'chatzot ha'layla. Ah, the wise people, the real yikarim, the real Bnei Tzion Yikarim, the real nice, the real Sheni Yidin. I don't say that term because we often use it pejoratively. The real super tzaddikim, the get up, the Navoni Lev, the wise of heart, get up at midnight b'chatzot alayim, b'deim al chalitzem kioleda, and they put their hands on their loins like a woman in childbirth to show that they're suffering. You know, he's talking about saying tikkun chatzos. I don't know if anybody ever said tikkun chatzos. Look, it's in the Siddurim. The tikkun chatzos, they get up at midnight and they cry for churban habayis. They cry for destruction of the base of Mikdash. People do it at home. You don't find minyanim doing it together. But people get up every night at midnight. And I remember our midnight in the summertime is 1 o'clock, 1:15. It's like midnight, 1:15 when you finish your afikomen. That's midnight in Thornhill, about 1:15, 1:20 or so. At 1:20, they get up in the middle of the night, and they're crying. What are they crying for? And ever go look up in the Siddur, Tikkun Chatzos. Al Tzaras Olam, they're crying for the suffering of the world. Like a woman in childbirth is stuck and can't give birth. She can't move the process along. It's extremely the most painful thing. Tzaras Yisrael, the pain of the Jewish people. The Tzaras HaShechina, the pain of the Shechina. Tzorat HaTorah, the pain of the Torah, Heim Bochim Umavakim, they are crying and mourning. So these people, they're, in other words, the Jewish people, most of us don't really understand this. Most of us can go sleep all night. You get up in the morning, okay, I'm a good guy, go daven shachris. No, go look up what Tikkun Chatzos is. Look up in your Siddurim. I think it's in the art school Siddur somewhere. I don't know where it is exactly, maybe at the end. Look up Tikkun Chatzos. It's crying for the Beis HaMikdash being destroyed. Who cries every day for the Beis HaMikdash? Crying, literally. V'yodim hu makirim, and these people who get up every night at midnight to cry, hey makiris, oh they recognize the depth of the pain, the source, the effects, the growth of it. Yodim heim shakolat sarot. They understand that all the tzars v'machashkim and the darkness, the choshech, kol narei gdolei hadamim hanishbachim. All they know that all the rivers of blood that's been spilled, kol atlaot v'anididuim, all the sufferings and all the wandering, they do it, kol aboz v'chol amishtama or mishatma, and all the hatred and derision that we're getting put down, kol arishol, the wickedness, v'azuma, zuma is like this, this How we translate Zuama? Zuama is like sweat. It's negative sweat. Spiritual, anti-spiritual sweat. It's like the sweat of animals, like sweating, like a sweaty bear, you know? Sweaty dog. They see all this trouble that we're seeing is really only, it's only the pain of the essential ideal which has been broken away from the had kol shel atzara el yon, the ultimate pain of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I should say, I skipped the line there, it's a vague echo of the pain. Had kol means it's like an echo of the tzar ha-yon, the pain of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, tzar ha-shamayim, the tzar of shamayim, the tzar of heaven, the tzar of shechina, the tzar of the shechina, the tzar ha-idealit, ha-mahutit, the pain of the essential ideal, ba-frada mimkor tanugel, which is broken away from the source of its joy. Ha-idealit ha-yonah Barochim shall briot v'bichirat adam, and the upper ideal, which is Bruchim, the spirit of the people of the creations, and the choosing of people. Chuvag Yisrael, the tshuva Yisrael, v'aromimut atzilut ruach haritzoni hikshua, is all connected really to the calling back to the coming back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So in other words, these people who really understand it, they're crying out, Vem Karim LaTshuva, and they cry out to Tshuva. They said, for Tshuva, Anu Laka Veinin Laka, we are to Hashem and Hashem is to us. This is how the piece ends off. So in other words, we have an opportunity really to kind of get up there. Right now, we're influenced by all the pieces around us here. So when we think we're keeping Judaism, we are. But once again, there are certain things that have been influenced into Judaism that have really been influenced by Western culture. Now, and eventually that will be pushed away. In the interim, we're still influenced by it, and we recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shechina is still in pain from the fact that the Jewish people have not fully woken up to recognize their own role. What will be their role? The role will eventually be, of course, to bring back, to stand from place up, bring back Mashiach, stand for Mashiach, the Mashiach, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be able to bring us to the end of time itself. So right now, in other words, this is really, if you want to see, just to summarize itself, eventually, right, when the glory of Kedusha is going to happen, so there'll be no room for any other opportunity to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to understand except besides Hashem, besides Yisrael, besides Bnei Yisrael, the land of Yisrael. Now, only the Jewish people can, you know, carry that out. Only we understand the uniqueness, the achdus of Hashem, the yichud of Hashem, the singularity of Hashem. However, because we live in the galus, we become somewhat detached from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not completely detached, but the cord has gotten somewhat frayed. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu's unity has really been picked up sometimes by other people and who've taken it away from us, or speaking in our name, or we don't understand what's going on here. Now, the world war that we're living through, is what he's really writing, is this is what the world is crying out. This is the scream of the world crying out for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it means it's also maybe the scream of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is crying out, the Tzara, the Shechina, looking for the Jewish people. And in the middle of the night, in the Chatzos HaLaila, HaKadosh Baruch Hu cries out in anguish over the Churban HaBayis, and we cry out as well by saying the Tikkun Chatzos. And eventually, this is going to be the end. And there are a few people, a few tzaddikim, who understand what this is going on. But right now, Rav Kook is saying this is the time when we need to get up and we need to come back to Eretz Yisrael. We need to kind of recreate our true blue Judaism, our own independent state, our own independent country, where we're not going to be influenced by those around us. We're going to make our own country founded upon the ideals of Judaism, not founded upon the Judeo-Christian ethic, not founded upon Western values, but build this whole culture of a country, and then we'll serve our HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we'll take our place as the apex of history. Now, we say, but that's not what's happening, Rav Kook. How can you write this? The answer, Rav Kook, is saying it has not yet happened. What has happened, for all this to happen, you first got to get to Israel. You first got to get people to Israel. So the people who are getting to Israel are the ones who are still kind of full, got the mud on them. They still have the influences. But until you get the people to Israel, you can't get to the next step. When will we get to the next step? I don't know. But we got to get everybody to Israel first, and that's really what this is all about. So the war is simply a symbolism here of our crying out for Hashem, or our HaKadosh Baruch Hu crying out for the Jewish people to recognize the Churban HaBayis has been, the Jewish people are outside of Israel, and we're being influenced, and it's now our time to wake up and go back there to Israel to make our own independent country. That's really what this last piece of Rav Kook is all about here. This last piece is about Eretz Yisrael, about the war itself. That's a theme here that comes across this piece. Very, I said it's only strange because you would expect at the very end of this, Rav Kook would say, okay, so let's get up, pick up your bags, and let's all get to Eretz Yisrael. That's really what he's saying. He just says it in a roundabout kind of way. Because he knows that, of course, if he doesn't write, say, in a roundabout kind of way, then you're going to say, but it hasn't happened. And the answer is, he's right, it has not yet happened. But wherever we are, the Kodesh Baruch is with us. Now, you're going to say, does that mean that Kodesh Baruch has abandoned the Jewish people? Of course not. Of course it does not mean. It means that wherever we are, wherever we are in exile, the Kodesh Baruch Hashchin is with us. Gemara Brachos, Gemara Megillah says this. Where every place the Jewish people were exiled, the Kodesh Baruch Hashchin went together with them. And this is really what we recognize. And there's also Masechet Bracha which says that every day there's a voice that comes like a Yonah and says, Oy lehem liyisrael, oy lehem lebanim, who's because the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of their sins. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu cries together with the Jewish people. So he just points out here in a footnote that, interestingly enough, let's just show you, I'm going to show you this footnote here, footnote 105, it's going to go all the way to the end. It refers to Rav Kook's students who use this actually at the end of World War II. Because people often wonder, where does World War II fit into this? It's footnote 105 here, right here it is, okay? Okay. I'm just making it a little bigger for you guys. Here we go. This is talking about, whatever Israel's exile, the Shekhinah is with them. It's Megillah 29a, Brachos 3a. Every day, heavenly voice coos the dove, saying, woe to children whose sins have destroyed my house, burn my temple, exile them among the nations. The Holy One, blessed be, shakes his head, saying, what good is it to a father who exiles children? Woe to children who are seen exiled by their father's table. Okay, this is the Gemara Masechet Brachot. Rabbi Yechiel Michal Chalap, who was the greatest disciple of Rav Kook, they call him eminent disciple. He's really responsible for doing publicizing a lot of Rav Kook's works, together with his son, with Rav Svi Yehuda Kook. Rabbi Yechiel Michal Chalap really is the man who kind of lived the life of Rav Kook afterwards, or he was actually founded the yeshiva, was that Rosh Yeshiva of Merkaz Rav Kook. In a letter addressed to Holocaust survivors in DP camps in Italy, entitled Nachamu Nachamu Ami, Comfort You, Comfort My People, holds up the ideal of empathizing with the pain of the Shechina. Let me just get over here. Pain of the Shechina. So in other words, he says to the people, he's writing to the people coming off the DP camps, he says, you got to recognize you suffer, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is also suffering. That's a very difficult concept. That's an unusual kind of concept. That if HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you suffer, we'll recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is suffering. I'm not quite sure what that means. How do we understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is suffering? HaKadosh Baruch Hu changes the world. The answer is HaKadosh Baruch Hu suffers when we're not where we're supposed to be. Okay? And that's pretty much the end of the piece itself. Okay, that takes us pretty much to the end of this piece itself. Let's see, comments, questions, complaints, fetching, no, good. So therefore, our job is really to go to Eretz Yisrael. And this is really, why is the war? So the war among all the other things. This is reminding us that Kadosh Baruch Hu is crying about all the things that are happening. It's not perfect itself. So the war, the difficulty of the war makes us aware of the suffering of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we have a responsibility to try to raise ourselves to come back to that. Okay? Questions? Comments? Okay, good. Okay, that takes us up to about, I'm not going to start the new piece here. Next piece is going to be, it's going to be a piece about Yisrael Tchiasol. The next piece we're going to talk a lot about Israel and about Judaism. So pieces in the next piece are actually much longer. I'm not sure if I sent you guys the next piece yet. I don't think so. Probably did not. Okay, I'll get it out to you before the next time we start it. It begins the next call of Yisrael. I don't have it in front of me here. I've piled away in a pile. I'll have it for Monday for you guys. It's the third. I told you the three parts that were written before the fourth part was what was written for 1920. The fourth part was written actually before the World War I started. The first three parts were written during the war. So parts 1 and 2, Israel and war, were written during the war, and the third piece we're going to read was also written during the war itself. The third piece is longer, the pieces are longer, the pieces are more intense. We have to go through them a lot slower, we'll go through everything slowly, just to understand what they are. There'll be a lot about, by the way, there'll be a lot about Christianity, or some about Christianity. What Rav Kook really sees is, of course, a negative force in terms of the influence not on Judaism, but trying to take the place of Judaism, and of course it's erroneous and so forth. Is there a comment there? Okay, we have about 10 minutes.
When does the actual book start? Is this on purpose? When does the actual book start? Or is this it?
This is it. This is the book. The book itself has got different parts. The book itself has got different parts.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm not sure, but let's see if I can find quickly the... This is, this is not what I wanted. Where does it say this is here? Arod, Hebrew, English, Arod, Hebrew, English, Arod, English, Hebrew, English. I don't have it, but I don't know if I have it here. This is actually, I'll put this up. This is from an older edition, but I think I may have the table of contents here. Let's see if I have the old. This is an older version. This is the version that was published really before this. I guess I didn't print the thing here. No, I didn't. Give me a moment. I think I have the table of contents somewhere.
Don't worry, it's your problem.
Not a problem. Problem is never a problem. Let's see just one thing here. This is here. O-Road. Just give me a moment. O-Road. It should be somewhere here. O-Road.
I think you showed it before, but I forgot. I thought this was still preliminary.
Here it goes. This should give me. Here we go. Let me try and get this back up here. Okay, let me put it back up. I think this should have. This should give me the contents. All right. This is the title page, and then it should have the contents. Here we go. Here's this. So he's got a long introduction, which we didn't do.
Yeah.
And here's what we got. There was a short short piece called Degi Rishlam that went up for 2 pages. We've done here. That's what we've done so far. We've done Eretz Yisrael, Land of Israel. We've done Hamelchama, the war. And now the third piece, that's really the part that was written all at the same time, is called Yisrael Utchiyato, Israel and its Renaissance. So these three pieces are really are written together at the same time. The piece that was written before, it was called Orot Utchiyato, the Lights of Renaissance.
I thought that was because we were talking about Orot, isn't that the title?
Yes, so everything is called Orot. The book is called Orot.
Yeah.
Okay, that's confusing. Yeah. The book is called Orot, and then he's got three parts that go in the title Orot Meofa, Lights of Darkness, and then Orot Tuchia, Lights of Renaissance. Just to kind of show you what's going on here, there's a book about light. So first of all, we talk about the Jews living in darkness, lights from darkness. We're in darkness, which is what? Outside of Israel. We're in the war. We got to get back. What is Judaism? You're Yisrael Tzkiyot. So, and then, of course, the last part is really about the lights of Renaissance.
Yeah, I thought that was your main book.
Okay, that's the main focus. All of it's the main focus. Okay, let's find the piece here I want to do. We got a few minutes to do a little bit about Shavuos. Okay, where's my Shavuos piece here? Shavuos, get up there. We go. Here's Shavuos. Okay, no, that's not Shavuos. There's Shavuos. Shavuos, there you go. Bingo. Okay. All right. So today is Monday. And the end of the week, or actually the beginning of next week, we have a holiday of Shavuot. Okay? Holiday Shavuot is a very short holiday. And interestingly enough, the holiday Pesach is a longer holiday. Now, you would expect, wouldn't you, that Shavuos, if you think about it, Shavuos should be a longer holiday than Pesach. If you think about it for a moment, Shavuos is really about Torah. The Pesach is about getting out of Egypt. So which is more important, getting out of Egypt or getting the Torah? The answer is getting the Torah. So a number of reasons suggested. The Rambam writes in Mor Nevuchim, the reason that is so is because, look, the Torah was given in one day. One moment that God gave the Torah. So you need one day to celebrate. Okay, the day that
if you were living in Egypt, you would probably think the day out was more important.
Maybe they might have, but it's on a scale of 1 to 10, the getting the Torah was more important. Rambam says something interesting, and I'm not sure how it's going to sit with you. You'll tell me your response. So the Rambam writes, Rambam writes in Mor Nevuchim, the Guide to Perplex, in the third part of in book 3 of the Guide to Perplex, the Rambam writes reasons for many mitzvot. So he says that, of course, Shavuos recognized the giving of the Torah. One day we got the Torah, and that's it. You got the Torah for one day, you celebrate one day. Pesach celebrates matzah. Now, eating food, you guys are going to love this. Eating food, when you serve a new food, it doesn't really hit you that things have changed until you eat that new food for a bunch of times. Come on, how many times, you change your menu, you have leftovers, you got leftovers. See, I served something new yesterday, I got leftovers, I serve it again tonight. So even if I eat the same thing 2 days in a row, it doesn't really hit me that something is unusual. So if I change my diet from chametz to matzah, I'm not going to think that anything really different happened. I ran out of yeast. Even if I eat matzah for 2 days, 3 days. So therefore, the holiday, for it to really sink in, because Pesach is about physical freedom. And one of the most physical things we do is eat. One of the most physical things we do is eat. And one of the most physical things we do on Pesach is we eat matzah. That runs for seven days in Israel, 8 days on the Yom Tov Sheni Shogolos. Therefore, writes the Rambam, Pesach, you got a whole weekend to celebrate, so you really recognize that something physically changed. Because physically, you can change and nothing changes. How many people start diets and get off the diet after half a dozen times? How many of you start exercise routines and it works for a few times and then it's done? So when you're dealing with physical change, it's got to have be reinforced. When you're dealing with spiritual change, this is almost like anti-intuitive. When you're dealing with spiritual change, you can even just get away with 1 day itself. That's what the Rambam writes is more in the book of the Guide to Perplex. I'm not sure. Not sure it makes sense completely to me. You think the other way around. Spiritually, it's harder for us to make a change. For me to make a spiritual change, I get up one day, I daven, okay? I daven with kavana. What do I know about the next day? The next day, I kind of just run through the pages, right? Maybe I make a change. If I get down to the oven and stove and I got to cook something, that make more of a change. The Rambam felt it was the other way around. Anyways, but Shavuot is really the culmination of what Pesach is all about. It's the reason why I'm giving you just the introduction, maybe what Rav Melamed is telling us about the relation of Pesach and Shavuot. So there are four names for Festival of Shavuot. The first name is really the holiday. It's called Shavuot. It's called the Chag Shavuot, the holiday of Shavuot, the Festival of Weeks, which we know that's what we call it. And it says, you're going to keep Chag Shavuot L'Shem Alekecha. Then it's called the Chag HaKatzir, the Harvest Festival, the Festival of the Harvest, or the first fruits of your work. So it's the first fruits here means not first fruits like apples. This is really, I guess, when you talk about first fruits, you're talking about really like the crops. Okay, so this is called also Chag HaKatzir, the wheat is ready. It's also called the Chag HaBikurim. The first fruits are just starting to ripen. Some fruits ripen very early in the season. That's the third reason. And the fourth name that's given for it is really called Chag Atzeret, which is the name given to it in rabbinic literature. Now, we think of Atzeret, we think of Shmini Atzeret, but when the Talmud wants to talk about Shavuot, it talks about Chag Atzeret, which means simply, Atzeret means to stop, Atzar, hold back, stop, do no work. Let's go through the names itself, he says. So the name of Shavuot is called Shavuot. All of the festivals have a defined date. Pesach starts on the 15th of Nisan, Rosh Hashanah for the 1st of Tishrei, Yom Kippur the 10th Tishrei, Sukkot is the 15th of Tishrei. Oh, Shavuot is no assigned date. Its date is dependent upon Sefirat Omer. It's true. You count 49 days. You bring an Omer offering on the second day of Pesach. You count 49 days, and the following day, the 50th, is Shavuot. So that's what the pasuk says. You're going to count from the day you bring the Omer, Sheva Mechvas Shabbos, Sheva Shabbat Shviyot Shmirano. You'll count them out of Machvata Shabbat Shviyot until the day after the seventh week. And then you count once again a number of psukim talk about counting 7 weeks. So we're counting 7 weeks. And it's not really a day on the calendar. So in fact, when we're waiting for the witnesses to give us testimony for Rosh Chodesh, sometimes the date varied. It could have been the 5th, 6th, or 7th of Sivan. It wasn't always the 6th of Sivan. In fact, some of you know, this is not here in Ramalamed, but some of you know that the custom is, in many places, many communities, that we don't start Shavuot early. Right? We don't bring in the holiday Shavuot early. You have to wait until actually sunset, or wait till Tzeit Kochavim, till actually gets, you know, the twilight is finished, at least, you know, 20 minutes after sunset. A lot of discussions where that rule actually comes from. It's actually mentioned from a statement of the Shalah, I believe, or it's actually mentioned by also Magen Avraham, and the Taz mentioned it. Why can't we make Shavuos early? Why? I mean, Shabbos you can make early. Many of you made Shabbos this past week, I'm sure before sunset, you made an early Shabbos. And it was Shabbos. You made Kiddush, you davened, it was the next day. It was Shabbos. It was the final. Why can't I do that with Shavuot? Why do I have to wait until it gets dark? And the answer is, one of the reasons is because one of the names of Shavuot is Shavuot. You're counting weeks. How can you celebrate Shavuot if you haven't finished the window 7 weeks? By definition, the day of Shavuot means you finish the counting of the Omer. I can't finish the counting of the Omer until I do Sheva Shabbat Tzmimot, 7 full weeks. The full week means I complete the actual entire day of each 7 days of 7 weeks, or 7 weeks of 7 days. So if I start my Shavuot earlier, I've really only done 6 days and, I don't know, 20 hours. 6 weeks, 6 days and 20 hours, not 24 hours. That's one of the reasons why we have to wait for it to get dark or for Shavuot to begin. It's machlokas when that's for Maariv. Some people say you have to wait to start Maariv when the Torah gets dark, say Baruch Hu. Some people say it's really only making Kiddush when you sanctified itself. Okay? That's where the Chumrah comes from, about waiting to start dark. If you can't, by the way, it's a Chumrah. If you really can't, you're sick or you can't wait or whatever it is, a person's older, so you actually can make Shavuot, you can start Shavuot even earlier. But Halacha, the custom has become accepted pretty much that we wait to start Shavuot until after the day is over itself. That's where it comes from, because it's called Shavuot. So, as a result, so the timing of Shavuot depends upon the timing of Pesach. We only start with Pesach, and we only get to Shavuot by starting with Pesach and the giving of the Torah. So therefore, you got two things connected. The Jewish people are unique. We have simple faith. We came out of Egypt itself, and we were, of course, led to freedom. And the freedom, of course, gets us really to Mount Torah, to giving of the Torah itself. That's pretty much how they go together. And so therefore, without the basic faith what happened on Pesach, we could not have gotten to the 7 weeks of getting to Shavuot, which is, of course, the giving of the Torah itself. And therefore, what do we really pick up from this? We really pick up the fact that both these things go together. Shavuot, Torah, and Pesach are the same thing. Yes, Pesach is longer, 7 days. Shavuot is 1 day. But it's really one long 7 week period to kind of connect the two together. And as he writes here in the last paragraph, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the festivals of Pesach and Shavuot, where we live the miraculous events of the Exodus, and to once again remind us of the uniqueness of Jews and simple faith. These realizations allow us to use the time period of Sfirat Omer to gradually ascend to the sacred day on which the Torah was given. When our faith became whole and complete, each year we're able to rise higher and higher. Ultimately, the whole world will be filled with righteousness and justice, and mercy and compassion. The land will be filled with the knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's what we're doing. This is our last week itself. Hopefully some of you guys are still in the game. No one's got out yet. Got one more week to kind of keep the game going until we finally get to the playoffs of this week. No, okay, the playoffs are not this week. The game is still going on. There you go. Okay, that pretty much takes us to the end of today. Comments, questions, we're good, okay? So an unusual piece of Rav Kook that we did kind of was not the way you expected it to end up. You expected it to end up with like, okay, let's go off to Israel. And Rav Kook is saying, no, we got to first get out of the mud. We got to first recognize that the Shmuel was crying for us to go to Israel the right way. Anyways, but that's something to keep in mind. Okay, have a wonderful day. Comment, any questions? Yes.
You may have mentioned this at the beginning. When are you coming back?
I'm coming back. I'm driving in the week from tomorrow. Why?
No, it's just that's all.
I'm on with you the whole week. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Next week, Tuesday, I'm driving. Drive day. I'll have someone from the Seder, but from the Beis Medrash run Tuesday. Okay. No, every day we'll meet. Okay, but I'll be with you today. This entire week. You got me here, broadcasting out of Baltimore, Maryland. Baltimore, no T like this. Toronto, it's Baltimore. Here you go. Okay. Anyways, I'm here with the whole week. The ganze Woche. Okay. Have a wonderful day. See you guys tomorrow. Okay.
No snow tires.
Okay. Good. No snow tires is right.